Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, July 3rd, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are on page 82, starting with the second paragraph, If We Have No Such Complication, reading through two paragraphs ending with Ain't It Grand, The Wind Stopped Blowing, and the comments will be on both paragraphs. Today's readers are The 12 Steps, Sherry K.B., The 12 Traditions, Nancy T., and the readers of the text are Leslie W. and John K. The share ID for Monday, July 2nd, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 11,608. That is 11,608. And for Tuesday, July 3rd, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 11,612, 11612. And our newcomer greeter is Melanie C. Our OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Sherry K.B. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Mo. Sherry K.B. in Northern California. Very grateful recovered compulsive overeater. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admit it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And with that, I pass. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you, Sherry K.B., and I will now ask Nancy T. to read the 12 traditions.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Nancy T., recovered compulsive overeater in Lewiston, Idaho. Grateful to be here with you this morning. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever nonprofessional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to be of service, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Nancy T. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To press star one, to share, press star one to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass and then press star one to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 82. We are starting with the second paragraph, if we have no such complication. And we'll be reading through two paragraphs, ending with, ain't it grand? I'm losing my place here. Ain't it grand? The wind stopped blowing. And I will now ask Leslie W. to get us started. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you, Mo. This is Leslie W. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Tennessee. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with us alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand? The wind stopped blowing." All right, farmer. So, these are two great paragraphs here. I can remember about 2.5, almost 3 years ago when I first started listening to Vision. I would come on the line and share, and I was a mess. My home was wrecked. I had, you know, my husband saying to me that he really didn't even want to be around me. And it was because I had done so much damage to our marriage, to our relationship, to our home. This disease of compulsive overeating, it can trick you into thinking, or it did me anyway, that, you know what, what's some extra food going to hurt anybody? I mean, what's the big deal? I'm not really hurting anybody but myself. I mean, you know, I'm not driving a car through a house. I'm not driving drunk with my kids. You know, I heard somebody else say that in the first hour. But you know what? If you look a little bit deeper, there is all kinds of damage that I did to my home, to my family, to my relationships. And the line that really juts out to me is selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. That was me. Mrs. Turmoil put a crown on my head. You know, I was constantly, my selfish and inconsiderate habits constantly kept my home in that state. You know, and the thing about it is, my husband was very patient with me. And, you know, I had to learn how to make amends to him. I had to learn how to repair that relationship. It did not happen overnight. Just like reconstruction is not going to happen overnight. Any kind of reconstruction is not going to happen overnight. You know, it takes time to mend those relationships. And for me, it took a lot of prayer. It took a lot of honesty. And it took a lot of service, you know, getting my mind off of myself and having my needs met. You know, it started with fixing my husband a cup of coffee every morning before he went off to work. Like, the simplicity of that, which was what I had to start with. Okay, let me start at square one and let me treat you like a human being. You know, and I'll never forget when he said to me, Leslie, you treat strangers and your program people better than you do me. And that really hit home with me. Thank you so much. So I really appreciate you letting me share this morning, and I pass.
Well, thank you very much, Leslie W., for getting us started. And just to remind everybody, we are on page 82, starting with the second paragraph, if we have no such complication, reading through two paragraphs, ending with, ain't it grand, the wind stopped blowing. And I will now take names for those who'd like to share.
Gina
Lisa
R.
Lisa J.R.
Gina R.
Elena.
Lisa, Elena.
Melanie C.
Melanie C. Anyone else? I have Gina R., Lisa J., I think it's J.R.
Yeah, R.
Pardon? Say that again. Could you repeat that? Oops, I think it was Gail. Not sure. I'll put Gail down there. All right, I have Gina R., Lisa, Elena, Melanie C., Gail. Freya R. Got it. Thank you. All right, we'll go with those. We'll start
ATB.
With Oh, Sherry. Okay, I got you. All right. Gina R., followed by Lisa J. R. Gina, will you get us started?
I sure will, Mo. Thank you. I've got my timer going. This is Gina R., gratefully recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, living in Green Valley, Arizona. I'm focusing on affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. I was one of the people that, quote unquote, prided myself that I was spiritually in tune with my faith and belief system. And at one point when I was doing some work in that part of my life, we were looking at spiritual giftings. And I was in a group of people and I ended up having a spiritual gift, somebody said, of being a rototiller. And they meant it in kind of a good way, in that I seem to be the person, the person, quote unquote, that can be in a room and will say what everybody else is thinking, but too afraid to say it. I have just never had a fear to say what a lot of people are thinking, and many times what needs to be said. But because I didn't have a filter with respect to understanding how my character defects operated in me, many times it came across just so inconsiderate. And so when I look at this morning, affections have been uprooted. That's what that's what I did. I was the rototiller in people's lives, and I, through my own selfishness, I destroyed, emotional connections, even when I thought that was what I was supposed to do. I'm the one that's supposed to expose this stuff for you, because I'm the one who's been given the answers for you. And it was such a deception for me, and I understand the delusion that I operated in for so much of my life. So the bottom line, though, is that sometimes that we do need a rototiller. We do need this kind of breaking up of the hard ground, so that we can get to the root and branch and the causes and conditions that put us in the state we're in. And that's how I see this program working for me now. So it's not so much me being a rototiller, but letting this program be the rototiller in my life to expose the things that God can show me have gotten in the way of my being useful to Him and being loving and tolerant towards all. So, so glad that I've come up out of this storm and I have this awareness, and I pray that I'll be able to keep it for today and pass it on to those who are still seeking. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Gina R. Lisa, followed by Yelena. Lisa, press star 1 to unmute.
Sorry about that, guys. Thank you, Mo, and thank you, everyone, for being here, keeping me, helping me stay sober one day at a time. I'm Lisa J.R., recovered in Baltimore, Maryland. Love these paragraphs. And, I saw myself, obviously, in the tornado paragraph. I was a tornado. I was like an F5 tornado because, you see, I had this character defect of being judgmental, and I would make a habit of doing character sketches on people. And if they ever hurt me, by God, I would go through and just obliterate them and leave nothing but, a few pickings for the buzzards when I got through. My tongue was sort of like a weed whacker. Once I got going, I not only did I cut down the weeds and everything else, I cut the flowers down. I robbed the beauty of the scene by cutting everything down. And, that first paragraph is really something I have to make a point of reading page 82 from that place where we started this morning to 88 frequently. And I've heard a lot of old long-timers say that they make a practice of reading those through the end of the chapter because we want to remember just how bad we were without beating ourselves. It's nice to know that the disease is can always take us back to that place, and I realized that I uprooted everybody's affections and feelings, and they did not trust me. So as I go through recovery, I've learned that one of the biggest gifts of recovery for me has been patience. Because being a person of faith, I have to wait and see faith do its work. I was one of those, I get mad and glad in the same minute, why can't you? Wondering why my husband wasn't overly affectionate when I recovered. Wondering why when I made amends to my stepdaughter that she just wouldn't forgive me. And it wasn't them, it was the damage I had done. So a forest, when a fire goes through, it doesn't grow back right away. It's going to take time. And thank God I can sit in faith and wait and watch the program work because things are getting better with my husband. Things aren't yet repaired with my stepdaughter, but I have faith that, God's doing a work. And it's not for me to repair those in the sense that I'm going to go in and fix their take on it. I just have to do the work. Like Larry says, chop wood, carry water, be a living big book in front of them. And I'm just so grateful to all of you that this once turbocharged weed whacker is now, can keep her mouth shut and just live one day at a time. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Perfect, Lisa. Thank you very much. And Yelena, followed by Melanie C. Press star 1 to unmute your phone, Yelena.
Hi, this is Yelena, recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. These two paragraphs are very powerful to me because I could never understand how my behaviors influence other people. I could always see how their behaviors influencing me, but I couldn't see how my behaviors influencing them. And taking the steps for myself is a reminder that I need to do every one of the steps. I need to know my character defects that are causing me to be like a tornado rolling my way through the lives of others. I need to know my fears that break people's hearts and relationships, or even why to look at the part where I am with every relationship. I'm in this relationship to fix the person. I'm not in that relationship to enjoy anybody. How selfish and inconsiderate habits play into those relationships. And there's no way in this situation that they talk about prior paragraphs. They talk a lot about that people take first three steps, but then the relapse kind of thing, and the importance of doing all the steps and the end result is love and tolerance of others is our code. So being sober or being abstinent is not enough. You have to keep going with all the principles, or the recovery becomes so unbearable that I go back into food. And this is a really good two paragraphs that reminds me, do 10 steps every day, help other people, that being sober is not enough. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Yelena. And Melanie C., followed by Freya R.
Thank you, Mo. It's Melanie C. here, a recovered compulsive overeater calling in from Oregon. Oh, I want to choose two words. There are so many that describe me, but I would like to choose shockingly treated and passing all understanding is the patience. The steps have opened up enough space so that God can come in to continue to help me turn my eyes around to me, you know, the lenses around to me so I can see better. Now, I couldn't see either. Yelena was saying that I could not see what I was doing. The only thing that I could do was scratch that itch of needing to explode and project onto somebody else, not caring. I couldn't even care what it might be doing to them. And that whole thing has been able to turn on me. I had quite a history of destroying the life of my husband and being able to see finally how it was diminishing him again and again and again over time. He never had a clear, clean availability of communication with me. I presented this thing that was just a monster. And he tried every way he could to sidestep or please or give some sort of whatever, his life, truly. He sacrificed his life, his ideas, his plans, his hopes, so that he could keep me happy. And there was no keeping me happy. And over time, as I was saying, it just diminished him. And I'm only pointing out him. Truly, there is a wreckage of many others. But he endured the burden the most. I wanted to read just real quickly something that appeals to me, and it's on page 419. It's in Dr. Paul O's story, and it says, it hasn't been easy to work out this relationship with Max, and that's his wife. On the contrary, the hardest place to work this program has been in my home, with my own children, and finally with Max. It seems I should have learned to love my wife and my family first, the newcomer to AA last. And I think that might be somewhat, you know, figuratively, I don't know how he ended up working that out, but that's exactly what the 12 steps have done to my life now. It has opened up my heart. I see my responsibility. I see that the work is mine. The amends is mine regardless of whatever's happening with my husband, whether he forgives me or not or whatever. We had a conversation last night, and it was absolutely from my heart what it is that I know that I see, and I wish that I can convey to you the change and the shift. I saw it, you know, a few years back, but now I know it. And my whole ambition is to do whatever I can to amend in any way, giving him back his full life on his own as a token of love and appreciation, that this man could love me, that these people could continue to love me and stay in my life is just unimaginable to me, and the responsibility is huge. This goes on my abstinence list now. This goes on my abstinence policy. We don't act this way anymore. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Melanie C. Freya R., followed by Sherry KB.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, my name's Freya R. from Southern California, and I've only shared once, actually. I was a newcomer last summer. I'm a teacher, so I can only get on the line during the summertime. But I mostly wanted to tell you how I listened all year long, though, you know, with the recordings. And I feel emotional because I just want to tell you how much you encouraged me and challenged me. And this morning I already listened to the earlier meeting, and you know, the affections dried up. I've seen the look in my children's eyes when I've wounded them, and their affections have dried up. And I feel encouraged and hopeful that if I keep listening, keep working the steps, I can change and become a better person. My dad was a dry drunk, and so I know you can deal with the addiction and then still not be a very nice person. And then, you know, are the affections dry up? I don't have much of a relationship with my dad to this day because he, you know, struggled with that. So I feel a little nervous talking. I don't want to say too much other than I think I might stay on the line and leave my phone number so that I could several of you called me last summer. I really appreciated it. I never called anybody back, but I will this time. Thanks so much for your encouragement. I pass.
Well, thank you, Freya, and welcome to the line live. Sherry KB, and then we'll be opening up for more shares.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB, again, in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. Thanks for your service, Mo, and everybody on the line, and welcome newcomers. And I'm just going to dive right in here. You know, they use these particular words, tornado, cyclone, and I looked them up just out of curiosity. And one of the things, especially a cyclone, is it's a system of winds rotating inward to an area of low atmosphere pressures. And then also the tornado, a person or thing characterized by violent or devastating action or emotion. And you know, I was one of those silent ones because what was going on between my ears was a lot of what I thought, how I felt. I'll never forget when I was working on my fourth step, doing it this way in this book. I remember calling a recovered fellow and talking about all the stuff that my loved one had done. And she said, "Well, what did you do?" And I said, "I didn't do anything." And she said, "Well, what were you thinking?" And I went, "Well, that's different." And she goes, "Oh, really? That's different?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "No, it's not. It's not different. You know, what were your thoughts around all of this?" And I'm like, whoa. Because I always used to joke and say, you know, if I was arrested for my thoughts, I'd be in San Quentin. And so, you know, I definitely was one of those more silent, deadly ones because it was all in my head and my thoughts that I judged and condemned people with judge and jury. And then obviously my energy, you know, showed it. And I always was making it about the other person and not about myself. And until I, you know, got abstinent and did the work this way through this book, I didn't see any of that. And that's what is amazing to me. So what I do know is that it's telling me here that, you know, I was a tornado in my loved one's lives, and I didn't even get it. And it talks about us practicing the principles in all our affairs, and then there's always a saying, if you can't practice the principles in all your affairs, limit your affairs. And so what that means to me is that if I can't do love, patience, and tolerance as my code, if I can't do God's will and ask God, what would you have me be and do in a situation, I need to remove myself from the situation. That's what I've learned by working these steps. And I didn't realize how selfish and inconsiderate I had been of others because, see, I was a people pleaser. And I didn't realize that people pleasing is dishonesty and it's also manipulation. I didn't get that till I did the work. And I didn't get really how selfish I was, and like a tornado with my selfishness, because I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. And God was nowhere to be found. With that, I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Sherry KB. And I'd like to remind everyone or some of you who just came on the line, we're on page 82, starting with the second paragraph, if we have no such complication, and reading through two paragraphs with Ain't It Grand, The Wind Stopped Blowing. And I will now take more people who'd like to share.
Terry B.
Patty T.
John K.
Lisa
Mary G.
Mary G. And Lisa, what was your last initial?
S-P, as in Paul.
Okay, thank you. That might be enough. We could maybe squeeze one more in. Okay, I have Terry B., Patty T., John K., Mary B., Lisa S.P. Let's start with Terry B. Thank you.
Hi, this is Terry B. from Phoenix, compulsive overeater and food addict. Grateful to be here. Thank you, everyone. I love this these two paragraphs. They just hit so close to home with me. One of the things that we read were, sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. And I just know for me as a food addict, I consider myself a gutter drunk when it comes to food. For me, I'm either all in the food or in recovery today. There's just no gray for me. I don't have that. And, I have those blinders on. Sometimes I forget that, all my behaviors have to really stick really close to the 12 steps and 12 traditions, because if I veer off in any way, I leave the window open for my food addiction to creep in. And I used to struggle with chronic relapse. And I've been doing this since 2001. And I'm just really grateful that, first things first is to stay abstinent for me. And then I get to have a relationship with my family, and I get to have a relationship with my friends, and I get to show up for people today. That's so different than who I used to be. I was always the excuse maker. I was late for everything. No matter what I did, I was always going to be late. I always tried to squeeze in one more thing before. And this program taught me, we show up to meetings on time. We sit in the first three rows when we're the newcomer. We give service. We raise our hand even if we don't want to, We offer our experience, strength, and hope. I think one of the greatest gifts this program has given me was my ability to say, oh, gosh, I don't know. Well, because I felt like I needed to be the expert on everything and know everything. And, if somebody came to me and said that they had some sort of an ailment, let's just say it's even like a headache, I would say, well, have you taken this? Well, have you thought about taking that? Well, have you done this? Have you done that? Well, who am I to know why this person has a headache? Today when somebody comes to me and says, I have a headache, I just say, I'm so sorry to hear that. Is there anything I can do? I don't diagnose people today. I don't judge that. That's a huge gift for me today. And I've found myself the last couple of weeks slipping back to some of that old behavior. And the last thing I just want to share, besides that alcoholic is like a roaring tornado, wreaking havoc basically through everyone's lives, breaking hearts. I've broken so many hearts. It's so saddened to me. And So what I was told this last couple of weeks is unsolicited advice is like silent criticism. And I think I've broken a lot of hearts. Thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Terry B. Patty T, followed by John K.
Hi, everybody. This is Patty T from Southern California, recovered and grateful today. I want to thank everybody for their shares on these two paragraphs. I don't really have family. I live alone. I have four dogs. And these paragraphs speak so deeply to me. You know, first of all, you know, in the disease for which I suffered many, many years before I was aware, my best thinking so that I would not be the tornado, you know, uprooting affections and rolling its way through lives, was to isolate and to stay apart from family and friends, to lose touch. I literally abandoned relationships, literally. And I'm only now understanding how hurtful that was to those people. Like I'm beginning to see that, oh, you know, that may have caused them pain. Maybe they didn't understand. Maybe they thought it was something they did. Do you know what I mean? But the fact of the matter is that it was my disease. I didn't want them to see me because I didn't want to see me. I didn't want to see who and what I was. And I couldn't bear it. I couldn't bear it. But in this abstinence, what I've come to and what I do understand now is that they always saw me. They always saw me. I was the only one who wasn't paying attention. I was the only one who was blind to who I was. They always saw me, and they loved me anyway. And I just dropped out of those relationships. Today, I live with four small dogs, and I can tell when I speak harshly to them, that look in their eyes like, oh, what's wrong? They don't take it. They don't take it like, oh, you hurt me. They look at me like, what can I do? Like, they're of service, and they teach me. But I would never be aware of that had it not been for this program and these steps and my abstinence. So I'm just so grateful to be here and be able to share this truth with all of you, because it really hurts to recognize, but at least I know I'm not alone. Thanks for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you, Patty T. John K., followed by Mary B.
Good morning. This is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. Thanks for everybody on King Tuesday. I was reading this morning and thinking about how we're sort of just about at the cusp between step 9 and step 10. And I remember when I first came into my first program, my first sponsor reminded me one day when I was talking to him about step 9 that he said, you know, it's called amends, not apologies. He said, because, you know, the word amend means to change. And I realized that was really true. And also to realize that things don't happen overnight, as it says here. You know, I don't understand. I apologized for the 20 years of damage I caused, but God, it's been a few weeks. Why aren't you over it? Well, because it was 20 years worth of damage, and it's going to take a while. And the other thing is that I saw this on both sides of this, because I had a mother who was an alcoholic, and I was too, but also a compulsive eater, and that sometimes people are a little skittish about the change because we've picked up, have put down and picked up again, and they want to be sure. And to realize that people's reactions to us is, you know, it's like an ocean liner, doesn't turn on a dime. But, you know, again, for me, this, the progression of the steps is so perfectly laid out, you know, and to amend this behavior, it takes you know, vigilance, you know, to constantly be working on removing my character defects, to do my part anyway to remove my character defects and hope my higher power helps me the rest of the way. And I sometimes say that the vigilance of these immediate behaviors, I like to call step 10 prevention, so that I don't have to do 10 steps, or restraint of pen and thongitis in the AA 12 and 12, or as I have amended it to say, restraint of pen and tongue and send button, which is something I need, but it takes practice. And to realize that, like it's been said, and I heard on the earlier meeting, the goal here is not abstinence as much as it is change. You know, I put the food down, that's great, got to do that first. But, you know, I put the food down when I was 20-something years old and got into a goal weight, and I was nuttier than a fruitcake and couldn't tell you what the big book said. And it was an example of that phrase you hear, thin is not well. And because I hadn't done some of the work I needed to, and in that this reading where it talks about selfish and inconsiderate habits, that was me. And for me, today it's about learning to live, to be of service to my fellows and my higher powers, to think of others. And today, I do a lot of these things in service because I can't go make amends to some of the people. All I can do is just keep moving forward and try and make a living amends through my behaviors today. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, John K. Mary B., followed by Lisa S.P. Press star 1 to unmute, please, Mary.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. I thought I was already speaking. This is Mary G. from Arizona, currently in Minnesota.
Sorry.
That's okay. You know, the line that really jumped out at me is the only thing he needs is to keep sober. For years in OA, I thought the only thing I needed was to learn how to be thin and everything in my life would be great. I had no clue that I needed that complete and radical personality change that they talk about. You know, it wasn't until in that second paragraph where it says sweet relationships are dead that I nearly destroyed the marriage I was in at the time and, you know, realized that the only person I can change is myself and, you know, started on a journey of recovery. And today, you know, I'm grateful to say that, you know, that marriage is still alive. And I have, you know, I was reading several journals back when, you know, when this marriage nearly was destroyed, and I thought, my gosh, I couldn't stand myself either, you know. And, you know, today I'm just so grateful that I don't have to be that raging, insane woman who would fight until, you know, she won. She just fought no matter what. I recall one incident where at a board meeting, you know, I argued with someone until they were so red in the face, I thought, oh my gosh, that person's going to have a heart attack. But I didn't care. I had to be right, you know, and he is on my amends list. I don't even remember the gentleman's name, to tell you the truth. It was so long ago. But I know that if I ever heard it, I probably would remember it. And, you know, I try to make a living amends, you know, by not allowing that rage to destroy more lives, you know, to not even realize that the house had been taken down by the tornado. Grateful to be on the line, and thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Mary G. and Lisa S.P., and we will have time for maybe one more share after Lisa, if you're interested. So, Lisa S.P.?
Yes, hi, this is Lisa S.P. in Fort Collins, Colorado. Grateful to be abstinent today. I've been abstinent now since November 25th, 2007, but that doesn't mean I'm cured, and that doesn't mean I'm emotionally sober. You know, it says he is yet a long way from making good to the wife of parents whom for years, wife or parents, he has so shockingly treated. You know, shockingly. It didn't matter at the time how I was treating them in my mind. I just wanted to be right. And, you know, they say in recovery, be right or be happy. Which one do I want to be? So, you know, being sober doesn't mean that I'm well. And that I'm treating my husband of 37 years well. I love some of the shares. Well, I loved all the shares, but about my husband of 37 years, who I so shockingly treated. And even today, I have to do a daily 10-step to see what are all the things I did to control and manipulate him. He's an addict in a different program, but that doesn't mean I'm better than him just because we're in different programs. When the food was on the brain, you know, 37 years, that's a long time to be married, since 1980, December 17th, 1980. And there's a lot of water under the bridge. I'm amazed he's still with me, by the way I was so shockingly treating him. And this sentence, affections have been uprooted. How do you ever root back the affections after they've been uprooted? I have a 33-year-old daughter, and much of her life I was in my food. And it says, hearts are broken. I have literally crushed my daughter's heart many, many, many times. She is currently not speaking to me. I've done the steps out of the big book. I still have a ton of amends to make. And I liked what was said, that big ocean liner, it doesn't turn on a dime. Sometimes when people really massively change, that's when people run. And my daughter is currently very confused, I think, by my behavior. It has changed so much. But I have to stay on course, stay on target, and do the next right thing and not keep doing the old enabling behaviors. But there's so much work ahead. Like we read in A Vision for You, you know, I need to always be cleaning house so I have something to give to others. And it's just one step at a time. Thank goodness my relationship with my husband now is better, I think, than it's ever been, but I still have to constantly clean house. It's like cleaning that dirty refrigerator. There's always something that's going bad. So I might as well get at it like today before it gets really stinky. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa S.P. We have time for one or two quick shares.
Janice B.
Anyone else?
Jana M.
Doug S.
I don't think we'll get to you, Doug, but we'll try. Okay. Janice B, followed by Gina M.
Thank you. Would you time me?
I will.
Thank you. Good morning, visionaries. This is Janice B., recovered compulsive overeater from Vermont. And grateful to be opening my mouth and sharing. Grateful for the willingness to do that. Okay, so the line that I highlighted here was, the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. And how, like, untrue that is. You know, okay, so I'm not filling the hole in me with food. I've had a hole, you know, and I have tried to fill it with things that I want, you know, want food, want people to like me, want to look good, want, you know, more money, want, trying to fill that hole with things that are outside myself. Want peace and serenity, you know, did not want conflict. And my answer to all those wants were to eat, but also to hide. That's what I've always done. I was never the tornado whirling through people's lives. I was the people pleaser. I was the passive aggressive control and manipulate person through through being nice. And so amends that I need to make, and like amends means change, means to not be hiding, but to be connecting. And it's connecting and being revealed and asking God for help with fear and growing my spirit which I need to connect with myself, my spirit, my higher power, and connect with others. And it's that connection and relationship that fills the whole. And I am, even though it's scary, you know, to be revealed and to say, wait a minute, what's the truth here? And then have the courage to do and say the truth and to be who God made me to be, that that grows my spirit, that results in the change that I'm looking for. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
And I apologize to Jana M. and Doug S. We are out of time, but maybe tomorrow. Okay. Oh, my computer went to sleep. Sorry. We will now. So thank you to all who shared. Thank you to Team Tuesday. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And John K., please read a vision for you.
I certainly will. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.